I'm Anne Strainchamps, and today on To the Best of Our Knowledge, do protests still matter? Michael White says no. In his book, The End of Protest, he says it's time to invent new ways to be the change you want to see in the world. And in fact, people like former Congressman Barney Frank agree. Here's what he told Steve Paulson.
Elected officials, particularly legislators, pay a great deal of attention to people who vote in their elections. That's not surprising. When you get large demonstrations, members of, particularly if they're down in Washington, members of Congress have no idea who the people are or where they're from or whether they're registered to vote. I cite to my friends the most effective organization, I think, pound for pound as a political lobbyist in the country, to one I generally disagree with, the National Rifle Association. Have you ever seen them hold a shoot-in?
Yeah, you tend not
to
see that.
What they do is everybody there registers to vote, and they inform their members of when legislation might be coming up or might be up for sponsorship, and they inundate you with phone calls. It sounds simple, but it's effective. Legislators are influenced to the extent that they're influenced by public opinion. Demonstrations are virtually useless. Now, I give as the example two things that I wish it were different, the Tea Party and Occupy, both very angry about the existing situation. The Tea Party people got into politics and took over the Republican Party. The Occupy people chanted and protested, maybe smoked a little dope, had some drum circles, and had virtually no effect on the legislators.
So, I mean, what you're pointing out is there would seem to be a difference between, I guess, what I would call raising consciousness, which it seems like that's what Occupy was about, as opposed to passing legislation.
Yeah, what does raising consciousness do? There are a few cases where the demonstration calls attention to a previously undisclosed wrong, classically the civil rights movement.
Right.
But in general, people are aware of some things. And again, raising consciousness, what does that do, raising consciousness? Some of us, I include myself, are political activists. I was involved before I was in office. I'm involved after. Most people have only a limited amount of time and energy they're going to give to political activity. And the problem is when you tell people who feel strongly about something, here's what you should do. You should come to Washington and march up and down on the Mall. That's all they're going to do. There's a certain substitutability. Now, if you say to people, come to Washington and write a letter to your member of Congress, that'd be great, but they don't do that. And I'm afraid that much of what protests do is to become the substitute for more effective political action.
So I want to go back to the civil rights movement in the 60s, because it sounds like you were saying that is one case where protests did matter. I mean, that they were effective. They brought public attention to these horrible things that were happening, especially in the South. So
yes. So
why was that effective? And then what you're saying is these more recent protest movements largely have not been.
Because there was a very clear-cut issue here. There were things going on in a geographic region that people in the rest of the country did not know of. So that was a very specific situation where you could bring sunlight to something which you knew if the rest of the country understood, they would deal with. It was a very concrete set of wrongs, very different than the general, more the public policy issues with regard to some of these other demonstrations.
Well, let me talk about another issue, certainly one of the most remarkable political movements of the last couple of decades in particular is what has happened with gay rights. I mean, just over the last two decades in particular, I mean, this has now become mainstream. It's become accepted both politically and legally. I mean, even gay marriage.
Let me sum it up for you. When I started out in politics 50 years ago, I thought that the fact that I was gay would be an obstacle to my ever being able to help bring about big social change. Over time, gay acceptability grew. Government's acceptability shrunk. So by the time I retired in 2012, my marrying Jim was more popular than my passing the financial reform bill.
Things have really turned around here.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, you tell a story about how you attended the March on Washington for lesbian, gay, and bi equal rights and liberation. And there was one thing in particular that just horrified you. I mean, sort of the seeing gay soldiers who were going to go out in sort of a dance routine.
Yeah, it was 93. I was frustrated by two things about the march. They bring hundreds of thousands of people to Washington and lobbying your members of Congress, writing, we're going to see your representatives and senators, was not on the agenda. It was a great big party. But in particular, there were 8 or 9 gay soldiers, all men, as I recall at the time, and they were waiting to go on stage and be introduced. And somebody thought, oh, wouldn't this be fun? Let's have them do a kick line like the Rockettes. Well, we're trying to get across, we're trying to win a battle for public opinion. We're trying to get across that these are soldiers and sailors and they want to be military people. And having them conform to this silly gay stereotype was about as stupid a thing as you can do. That whole march was a significant wasted effort because it was an emotional outpouring for us, but it failed to connect. And one of our strongest supporters, Senator Dick Durbin, a great supporter of LGBT rights, he said to me, Ronnie, we're not hearing from your people. All my colleagues are saying they only hear from the opposition. So the opposition was doing the smart thing from their standpoint. They were writing to members of Congress, going up to members of Congress, going to their office, saying, don't do this. And we were having military people in kick lines.
Hmm. So how do you explain the success of the gay rights movement over the last couple of decades? I mean, it has been amazing how this movement has really changed America.
Two things. So we did a very good job of mobilizing politically. Those demonstrations were a distraction, but we only had a few of those. But secondly, what helped us was reality. What changed it was this. Before Stonewall in 69, up through into the 70s, we were hiding. Beginning in the 70s, people started to come out. That's an interesting phrase in itself. Basically, we stopped hiding.
So it would seem this is an example where actually maybe it wasn't so much political action that sort of changed the way the country saw about this. It was sort of I would come back to the raising consciousness, people coming out, normalizing.
But it had nothing to do with demonstrations. The demonstrations hurt more than they helped. Raising consciousness meant telling people the truth. So, yeah, that was helpful. But then what that did was create a basis on which we could then act politically. It was a two-step process. Yes, we raised consciousness, but we raised consciousness in a sensible way, in a non-offensive way, in a non-demonstrative way. It was, by the way, Dad, I'm gay. Oh, I want you all to know on the team, I'm a lesbian. That's very different than this aggressive, in-your-face kind of activity that is demonstrations.
Now, I'm guessing that most people do want change to happen through the legislative process, but I think often the real divide is whether this change, how it happens. I mean, does it usually happen through a series of incremental small gains or
yes,
rapid sort of seismic monumental
shifts?
Well,
let me ask you, what's the rest? Give me the rapid change that happened. What's your example? I got mine, civil rights.
Yeah.
Begins in 1954.
Right.
And then a civil rights bill passes in 64, and then one passes in 65, and one passes in 68. On gay stuff, yeah, we start making progress in the 70s. We break through 40 years later. No, change. Look, the fact is, by definition, change is tough because it's a status quo. It's not a pure accident. It's there because some people believe in it, and it creates its own vested interest. So change always happens incrementally. I can't think of a case where in one fell swoop the change happened.
Now, you clearly are someone who has a lot of faith in government, in governmental institutions.
No, I don't.
You don't?
No, I don't. What's your alternative? I don't have faith. I don't have faith. This isn't religious. I want to see social change. So I am working for what I think is the most effective way. That doesn't mean I have faith in it or that I'm optimistic about it. I guess I should quote to you what has become my mantra. It's a line I borrowed from a great 20th century comedian, Henny Youngman, the king of the one-liners. One of his jokes was, how's your wife? Compared to what? If I want to make social change, the government compared to what? Drum circles and smoking dope? No, I don't have faith. I have made a, I hope, rational decision based on what's available to me that this is the most effective way to bring about change.
Yeah. Well, Congressman, this has been a pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Well, you're welcome.
That's Steve Paulson talking with former Congressman Barney Frank. He's the author of Frank, A Life in Politics from the Great Society to Same-Sex Marriage.